Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sake Revolution. That would be America's first sake podcast. And I am your host, John Puma from the Sake Notes, also the administrator over at the Internet Sake Discord and lead mod over at Reddit.com/sake community, where we get together and often talk about sake labels. For purposes of this show, though, I am the guy who's a sake nerd like you guys, and definitely not the sake samurai. I leave that to my co-host.
And I am the co-host, Timothy Sullivan. I am a sake samurai, sake educator, as well as the founder of the Urban Sake website. And every week you will find John and myself here tasting and also chatting about all things sake and doing our best to make it fun and easy to understand.
I like that fun part, because we're really going to be doubling down on, I think, on the fun today.
Yes.
Or at least that's the goal.
So, John, I understand you've been studying Japanese. Is that right?
It would be accurate to say that during the pandemic, there was a long stretch of about a year where I was really studying Japanese. Mm-hmm. It is also accurate to say that I have not been studying Japanese very much in the past 2 months or so.
So you're using
kind of hit the wall.
You're using the Timothy Sullivan method of learning Japanese, which is stop and start, stop and start. Oh. Well, I'm going to ask you if you know a very famous Japanese word. Do you know what kawaii means?
Yes, that is something that they teach us pretty much on day one. It means cute.
Cute. Yes. Cute. It does mean cute. Think Hello Kitty, right? That's the ultimate kawaii.
I think so. And I think that, kawaii, I think that when Americans hear Japanese words, that's like one of the first ones that they pick up on, because it gets used a lot in popular culture.
Absolutely.
But yes, it does mean cute or adorable.
Yes. And why are we talking about kawaii today?
Because sake labels can sometimes be very kawaii.
Yes, that's right. We're going to be talking about super cute sake labels and sake labels in general. I think that'll be a good topic too.
Sake labels in general. We don't want to restrict ourselves too much.
No.
But yes, cute sake labels, informative sake labels, fun sake labels. Yeah. I think this is going to be a little bit of a fun one today.
Yes. And you and I have both picked out a label that we think is super kawaii, super cute, yes. And we're going to taste those later in the show. But for now, I wanted to ask you a question about sake labels in general. I remember when I was first starting out tasting sake, I didn't know one from the other. I didn't know anything about SMV or any of that stuff. And the label was really what I had to go on when I was standing in the shop and looking at the sake's on the shelf. Do you think it's okay for beginners to buy sake based on the label alone?
Well, I think that when we first get into sake, we don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. When we don't really know a lot about sake and we want to get a little adventurous and we go to a sake shop, what can we do but look at the labels and see what looks interesting to us, or kawaii if we're into that. but interesting, I think, is also important. If you're in a shop that has a more boutique-y feel to it, there's usually very informative staff that you can talk to. Mm-hmm. But for purposes of our conversation today, we're talking about just buying things based on label. And I think you can, you can do that. I've done it. I'm sure you've done it. I'm sure everybody that's listening to this has at some point or another walked into a store or been in a restaurant and looked at a label and was like, that one looks cool. I'm going to have that.
Yeah, I admit it. When I was first starting out, I totally did that. But you have to take some chances. You have to roll the dice, and trying a sake based on the label can be a really rewarding experience, and it can also blow up in your face too.
It can also backfire spectacularly.
Yes. Yeah, and there's all different types of sake labels. And I don't know if you think this, John, but I think that in the last 5 years or so, brewers have been getting more active with redesigning their labels and coming out with cuter, more engaging things, stepping away from that super traditional, old-fashioned sake label look and having more dynamic labels.
And when we say that super traditional, old-style sake label look, You're talking about just like the white background or the colored background with just a lot of kanji on the front. Is that what you're going for?
Yeah, I would say kanji heavy. So the Japanese writing system is called kanji. And if there's a lot of kanji and there's just this look to, like, you know, 1950s, 1960s designed labels that are very conservative, a little stodgy maybe, and very traditional. And, you know, people are asking, oh, is it better to stick with the label we've had for all this time, or do we redesign it and make it dynamic for a new generation? So a lot of more traditional breweries, I think, are up against that question. And I don't think there's anything wrong with redesigning. I think it's fun and exciting to get a new label out there.
Yeah. And, you know, as a foreigner, I think it's kind of great. And I do think that because export is a much bigger deal for these breweries and will continue to be, I think it is a question they need to ask themselves. And it is a question that more and more often we see them going for. And we see them people making changes or simplifying the labels. What kind of things do you kind of like about sake labels? Like when you're, you know, now that you've been at this for a long time and you've been a sake educator for ages, didn't mean to blow up your spot there. But when it comes to these like redesigns and stuff like that, what kind of things do you think help the consumers here?
This ties in really nicely with something I was going to ask you, and we can talk about these together, which is English on sake labels. You know, how important is that? And we're both in the export market, so our friends and customers and people we work with and drink with, I think they appreciate some English on the label. And when a label is redesigned by a brewery, my counsel, if they ask me, what's your opinion? I always say having a little English somewhere on there for people to read. If this is on the shelf in New York or somewhere in the U.S., having that English on the labels just goes a long way to helping people remember the brand name or remember the brewery name. And I think it helps a lot, right?
I think so too. It really helps you engage a little bit more with the brand right away. At the very least, I would love to see some English. At, you know, and if they can't do that, then what I've seen in a lot of cases is they'll stylize. So they're still going to use the kanji, but they stylize it in a way where it looks a little bit more like art. Mm-hmm. And it becomes very striking, and you're just looking for that thing. Mm-hmm. And you go like, oh, I like that one. You know it because it looks very distinctive. It looks very beautiful, and you just kind of have that in your head. I've also become a really big fan of color coding on labels. So if you do like a nice striking piece of art on your label, and then you either color the letters or the background to go along with like your different grades or your different products, your different rices or your different products, it really makes people, you know, it simplifies it so much for the Western consumer, because they can just go like, oh, I know this one. I've had the blue one. I want to try the red one. Mm-hmm. And it's super easy for you to just remember which one you like, because all you didn't even have to think about the name. All you had to do is remember the color. And I think that's a lot of fun, especially for people who are new to sake.
Yeah. Now, I know I just said that, in my opinion, English on labels is important, but there are some breweries that just do a graphic image that is so striking and so unique and so memorable that I think it kind of transcends language too. So there are some labels that, you know, they must hire really, really good graphic designers who come up with these striking images that just, you remember them. They're very memorable. They don't blend into the crowd. And I think both of our cute labels today are in that category where they're just so memorable that you don't necessarily need that much English because you can remember the image.
And having some English on there as well, always a big plus. Yes. Like, I think that's a great thing as well. There's a brand that I think that both of us are familiar with that I think does the kind of nice graphic with the color coding and some English in a nice way that makes it very easy to remember, and that's Shichita.
Yeah.
They have the kanji on there, but it's very, very stylized.
Yeah.
And to a Westerner, it kind of just looks like really nice art. Mm-hmm. And then each of their different labels, you know, the label design is the same on all of them, but the background color is different on every single one of them. And then underneath it says Shichita in English. And it's very easy for you to remember the brand because of that. And then with the colors, it's really easy to just to pick them off and know which one you had before, know which ones you liked. It's a really good idea.
Yeah. So with Shichita, it's very slick, very well-designed, minimal. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't fall into the cute category. It's a very elegant look, isn't it?
It's elegant. It's not cute. We will say that it's more elegant than cute. On the chart, we need a chart that's like elegant or cute. And the Sachita is definitely in the elegant category, very well designed. But our focus today is cute. I'm very curious, how much do you, as far as you know, how much does the label influence the sales? Does it have the desired effect, or is there any evidence of that?
That's a great question. I don't have a ton of insight into that, but I would say it's similar to the wine world, where I've heard it said in the wine world that a label can make or break a new release of wine. And you want to make sure that the label lines up with the brand and the price point and the marketing, and that it all works together to make a successful release of a new wine. And I think for sake, it's similar, that in order to stand out in the new world of sake sales with all these energetic brands coming out, that it really is important to have an engaging, energetic label to make people reach for that bottle, say, what is that, to pique people's interest.
I agree. And there is evidence in and other alcohols. I don't have a tale specifically about wine, but there is an old story of a brandy company that had a competitor come in with a nicer label, and they started to lose market share to this new competitor. And they were trying to wonder, like, what is this competitor doing that we're not? Mm-hmm. So they scheduled blind tastings with experts, and the experts all preferred their brandy. They did blind tastings with regular people. The regular people, for the most part, chose their brandy, all in blind tastings. Mm-hmm. When they started to show them the bottles, the people chose the other brand. Even though blind, they chose they chose that first brand. Mm. So they went on to redesign their bottle to be a little bit more similar to the competition, and boom, it completely evened things out, and they went back up in sales. Wow. So the design of a bottle and design of a label influences the way you think about something. It influences the way you taste it in some ways.
Wow. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. Your relationship with a beverage starts when you look at the bottle. It's really weird. It's just, doesn't make a lot of sense to us, but it is something that humans experience. Mm. It's fascinating and very interesting.
Yeah. That is really interesting. I think we can agree that the label is super important and can really influence sales a lot. Well, it's time to get kawaii up in here.
Is it? All right. Yes. This is a lot of fun. I really love cool looking sake labels. I love cute sake labels. And this is going to be a fun little back and forth we're going to do here, I think. So Tim, why don't you go first? And first I want you to tell me a little bit about the sake, but I want you to focus on that label. Tell me what you're seeing. You got to paint a word picture for our audience at home.
Yes.
Even though you guys can go to the show notes and see pictures of the label, I want to get as much in your head as we can on the show here.
Yeah. So my sake label is super cute, and it has a really deep and kind of historical background. So
historical?
Yes.
Historical cuteness.
Yes, historical cuteness.
Oh, I am excited.
Yes. So the sake that I picked is Yuki Otoko Junmai. This is often Yuki Otoko. So
Yuki Otoko. So that's snowman. Snowman?
Well, snowman. The nickname in English is Yeti, and sometimes called Abominable Snowman. So
I like that.
It's like Bigfoot, kind of. Mm-hmm. And it's a mythical creature that lives in the mountains of Niigata. So It is a not totally scary, but sometimes helpful creature, covered with hair like Bigfoot or a Yeti, and lives in the snow-covered mountains. Mm. So the label that I picked was the Yuki Otoko Junmai, and there is a drawing, black and white drawing, of the snowman carrying packages on his back with two white eyes. So the outline of the snowman is all black and you can see his fur all around him. And he's carrying packages. And this creature was known to help wayward travelers carry their packages through the snow to get over the mountain. So that's why he's pictured with the carrying the bundles on his back. And his two little eyes are just peering out at you. Two white eyes and this black furry, like almost like a Muppet, right? Looks like a Muppet a little bit. Anyway, if you want to see this Yukio Toko, you have to check the show notes. Yeah. SakeRevolution.com.
So I'm going to show my age here a little bit. But when you described it, I imagine like the Abominable Snowman from the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yes.
A little animatronic cartoon. Yes. Cartoon, the right word?
Stop motion.
Whatever it was. That stop little show motion. From... Yeah,
or stop motion. I think it's claymation. Well, whatever.
I don't know. I mean, either way, it's still stop motion, even if it's claymation. I remember that show when I was a kid.
Absolutely. And that's the Abominable Snowman. And he ended up being not so mean, but very scary when you were a kid, right? I was very scared.
Totally.
Yeah, so that's...
But then he kind of gets... He's kind of a little goofy at the end.
Yeah, that's the vibe we're going for here with this label. So it's super cute. It's very graphic and very striking. And it says Yukio Toko in writing over the main part of the illustration. Now, if you'll indulge me for just a second, I want to explain how this connects to the brewery and why it's historical.
So I'm ready.
This was super fascinating. So there is a merchant and a book author who lived in the Edo period. Like we're talking... born in 1770, lived into the 1800s. His name is Bokushi Suzuki, and he wrote a book called Hokusetsu Seppu, which translates to The Snow Stories of the North Etsu Province. And this was a bestseller in the Edo period. So at the samurai 1800s time, this was a bestseller talking about life in the snow country of Niigata. And he did illustrations depicting all the different things that happen in snow country. And he made a drawing of a yeti, of a Yukio Toko. And you can see his drawing of Yukio Toko in our show notes as well. And John, you can see here how much they look like each other.
I do see this is definitely, it almost looks like a silhouette. Yeah. Of that drawing. Like the line work is almost the same. The framing is really similar. And yeah, he looks a little scary, but also pretty cute and helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, and the connection to the brewery, the last thing, is that the son of this author, the Suzuki-san who wrote this very famous book in the Edo period, his son became the seventh generation president or owner of the brewery that makes Yukio Toko. So the family is connected to this book. The brewery family is connected to this book as well. So, you know, this is so Japanese. You scratch the surface a little bit and there is so much history and connection below the surface. You think it's just a cute label, but it's has so much deep meaning for this brewery in particular.
More.
Yeah, there's so much more. Anyway, so
it's great.
Yeah, so that's the one. And I'll just give the stats real quick for my sake, and then we'll go over to yours for your introduction.
Sure.
So this is a Junmai sake, as I mentioned. The rice is Yamada Nishiki, milled to 60%. The alcohol is our average 15.5%. And the SMB is plus 12. So this is going to be a dry one. And the acidity is 1.2. And the brewery name is Aoki Shuzo. Established in 1717 in Niigata.
1717.
Yes.
Ooh, these breweries.
Yeah. So that's my super cute sake label, and I am dying to hear about yours. So what do you got, John?
Alrighty, Tim. So I have the Tatenokawa Tate Nyan Junmai Daiginjo. Now, Tate Nyan is the name of Tatenokawa's brewery cat. Now, all right, so you know how in New York, and you know, there's a lot on social media these days, it's a very popular thing to talk about. Bodega cats?
Yes.
All right? You know, they have so same idea. This is a brewery cat. It's a stray that snuck into the brewery. and they decided to care for Tatenyan, and is now kind of their official mascot. So for a while, it was the unofficial mascot, but now official mascot of Tatenokawa Brewery in Yamagata. They have pictures of Tatenyan at their website of the actual cat. You can see that. We'll put that in the show notes also.
Definitely.
This is a real cat. This is not just a... It's not just a fantasy mascot thing. It's not just a drawing thing. This is an actual feline that theoretically one could go meet if they went to Tatenokawa, I assume.
Okay.
I have never been to Tatenokawa. I have never met Tatenyan. But they do have this label, this sake label, to honor their official mascot of Tatenyan. Now, the label is a cute, very, very, very cute drawing of a little cat with a bottle of sake. One paw has like the bottle of sake kind of balancing the bottle against its body. And the other paw is up in almost like the lucky cat position.
Yep.
And he's surrounded by all these little like good luck ideas, a good luck charms. There's a bow, there are fireworks, there's a daruma, there's a masu, there are... What else is in here?
I see a cherry blossom.
There is a cherry blossom. There's a turtle.
Yeah.
Lots of little things like that. All these little cute little icons around it. So it's just cuteness on top of cuteness. There's just more cuteness everywhere you look on this label.
The cat has two little red spots on its cheeks, like it's been drinking and it's turning a little red.
Very, very cute.
And it has a sake cup in front too.
It's cute. He's ready to go, or if he's with the cheeks, he's been going. It's Tate Nyan. Now Nyan, Tim, is like, you know, we say like cats say meow.
Yeah, meow.
In Japan they say cats say Nyan, so like Nyan.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it means
tate meow.
Tate meow, more
tate
or less.
Meow. That's meow. Even that's a cute name.
Everything about this thing is cute. Yes. So, you know, about the actual sake. This is a Junmai Daikinjo, as I mentioned. It's using omachi rice. So big thumbs up from John over here. The rice has been polished down to 50%. It is 15% alcohol by volume. The sake meter value is +4. So the tiniest hint that it might be dry. And the acidity is 1.4.
Okay.
So,
and that's again, that's Yamagata, right?
Yamagata. That's in Yamagata. So yeah. I'm expecting some fruit, yes, even though that's omachi rice. I just imagine that thing is halfways.
All right.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
So why don't we get on to the drinking portion of our show? And why don't you go first with your abominable snowman?
Okay.
Who does not appear to be that abominable at all. Kawaii snowman.
All right, here we go. I've got this open and poured into the glass and going to give it a smell. Okay, it smells ricey, very ricey in a good way. Again, that I think I've referred to this before. If you have a rice steamer or you're making rice on the stove, the moment you pull the lid off steamed rice and it wafts up, that freshly steamed rice aroma is what I'm getting off of this.
Yeah. And I believe that we've indicated in the past that is a quality of Niigata sake a lot of the time.
That's a really good point. Yeah, Niigata, for our listeners, is a region of Japan that has the most sake breweries of any region, and they have a very distinct regional style that is crisp, clean, and dry, basically, in a nutshell. They call it Tanrei Karakuchi in Japanese, but it really has an emphasis on lighter, cleaner tastes. And this has a very crisp, ricey, gentle aroma. Yeah, really, really light, clean, and I'm ready to take a sip. So here we go. Okay. Mm. It tastes like rice too, and it's dry, but it's smooth.
Really?
Yeah. For a Junmai, this is really smooth. And this This is just like a classic Niigata sake. It's dry, it's clean, it's very lightly ricey. Again, the reference here is steamed rice. So it's a softer impression of rice. Really nice. But overall dry. The finish is showing up as a very dry finish. This would be
well, it is plus 12. Yes. So if it's not dry, I don't know.
Yeah, it's very dry and just easy drinking, not complicated, simple, straightforward. This would be great with your izakaya food. If you wanted a clean sake as your backdrop for all the izakaya food, okonomiyaki or yakitori or deep fried, whatever, this would be a great all-purpose, dry, delicious, smooth sake to drink with that. That's in a nutshell, that's what we're dealing with here.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
That does sound very friendly towards that kind of food. And it sounds like it would lend itself to your late night izakaya needs.
Yeah. And I think the Yukio Toko would like this style of sake too. Your character is drinking sake. I want mine to drink sake too.
Mine is actively drinking sake on the label, which is great.
Mine is actively helping others carry their packages over the mountain.
Priorities, Tim.
Yes. Maybe those boxes on the illustration are filled with sake.
Helping the strangers with their sake. It's very nice.
Yes.
And he can be paid in sake.
Yep. So really good. Little bit of a creamy note I'm picking up on now. Dry, soft, ricey, easy drinking, just really good. All right. Well, that's the lowdown on Yuki Otoko Junmai. Let's move over to the Tatenokawa Junmai Daiginjo.
Yes, let's. Well, not getting that steamed rice that you're getting on yours, Tim. But I am picking up some fruit, which is nice. And aroma is a little bit reserved. It's like there's not that much, which is a little uncharacteristic for the region. The region in Yamagata, usually a lot of fruity aroma, a lot of melon in a lot of cases. But on the flavor, it is definitely showing up. It has that richness that we think of when we think about omachi. If you guys go back to our omachi episode, we go in depth on this. And that's very much present. But it's also surrounded with some really nice fruit. A little bit, I want to say, kind of like a overripe almost strawberry. Very, very, like, it's hard for me to say, like, very faintly overripe strawberry, but that's like something that's on the edges of the of the taste. And again, that richness, that little that special something that comes from omachi is present here as well. Very, very nicely balanced. The two play in harmony really, really well.
How is it coming in on that impression of sweetness or dryness?
Pretty neutral, actually.
Neutral, yeah.
It has some qualities that make me think it might start to present dry, and then it just doesn't. It balances out with a little bit of sweetness. So neither side really goes very far. It's just right smack in the middle, which is very nice. I'm enjoying this a great deal.
Yeah, that sounds like it's right up your alley.
Yeah, you know, omachi from Yamagata, please. It's a rare treat. I don't think a lot of breweries over there do a lot with omachi. This is very, very pleasant and a little bit of a different look from Yamagata, I think. You know, we talked about how your sake is very representative of Niigata. And I would say that this is not necessarily representative of Yamagata. This is a little bit outside of the typical Yamagata comfort zone, although the fruit is there. The fruit is definitely hanging around, but it is a little bit different. I kind of like that a lot about it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about if we bought our sakes based on the label alone, would we be shocked, surprised, disappointed? I think if I saw this black and white snowman Yukio Toko drawing Mm-hmm. It's black and white. It's like a big furry Muppet kind of peering out at you. And it's not super soft and cuddly. This would speak to me more as a drier style of sake, I would think, just looking at the label, if I had to guess what it might taste like based off the design. So I think they pretty much nailed it here. It's kind of a simple design, and the sake is very straightforward and simple as well. Mm. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I think so. I think, yeah. You know, big cuddly snowman in the mountains, thinking Niigata, thinking dry sake, I'm thinking rice. Yeah, I definitely get that from what you're saying. I think on my end, I would be expecting something a little fruitier or maybe a sweeter, because it is like this cat having a great time. He's partying. Instead, you have this really fruity and rich sake without a tremendous amount of aroma. It's beautiful sake and it's wonderful to drink on its own, but it's not always what I think of when I look at that label.
Your label is very playful.
Yes.
It's very playful. And there's a childlike quality to it as well.
Yeah. 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 And I think that if I had this label and poured it and it was your sake, I would think it was wildly out of place. but with mine, it may not hit 100% with what the label makes me feel it's going to taste like, but it's still like within the, you know, it's within the diagram. Like you could see it from here. it's definitely within the realm of what you would be thinking about. But Omachi, I think, is a little bit more complex. It has a little bit more depth to it. Mm. Whereas Playful Cat, I'm thinking a little bit more, a little bit more carefree.
Yeah. Maybe a little less complex and maybe just a touch sweeter. Probably. Right, right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still lovely.
And it's adorable.
Yeah.
And the sake, I've had yours before as well, a different time. It is absolutely delicious. So I don't think anyone would be disappointed with either of our sakes.
Very much so.
That was so much fun. Thank you, John, for tasting with me as always. And I want to thank our listeners as well for tuning in. We really do hope that you're enjoying our show. If you would like to show your support for Sake Revolution, the best way to do that is to back us on Patreon. We are a completely listener-supported podcast, and we appreciate each and every one of our patrons, and thank you so much. And we invite all our listeners to support us on Patreon.
And to do that, you go over to patreon.com/sakerevolution. And as Timothy said, we want to thank each and every one of you who supports us. You're supporting us right now by listening. You can also support us by using your podcast app of choice and writing us a review. It gets the word out about the show in ways that only the algorithm really understands.
And as always, to learn more about any of the topics, sakes, or sake labels we talked about in today's episode, be sure to visit our website, sakerevolution.com, for all the detailed show notes.
And if you have sake questions that have been nagging you in the back of your head and you need to have them answered, we have an email address for you to send them to. That address is feedback@sakerevolution.com. So until next time, please remember to keep drinking sake and kanpai.